and amazing too.
This is VOA News. I'm Joe Ramsey. Indonesian rescue workers were racing on Tuesday to reach people still trapped in rubble after an earthquake devastated a West Java town a day earlier, killing at least 162 people and injuring hundreds, as officials warn the death toll may rise. The epicenter of the shallow 5.6 magnitude quake was close in a mountainous area of Indonesia's most populous province. The tremor on Monday afternoon prompted panicked residents to flee onto the streets as buildings collapsed. At least 162 people were killed in Monday's quake, many of them children, with more than 300 injured. West Java's governor said, warning some residents remain trapped in isolated places. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said on Monday Russia must stop shelling the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant after it was rocked by shelling on Sunday. Quote, the demilitarization of the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant is extremely important. Russia must withdraw all its fighters from there, Zelensky said during his daily address on Monday. The shelling drew condemnation from the International Atomic Energy Agency, which said such attacks risked a major disaster, although the UN Atomic Watchdog later confirmed there were no immediate nuclear safety or security concerns. Russia and Ukraine on Monday traded blame for at least a dozen explosions at the plant. Ukraine urged residents of Kyiv and several other areas to limit electricity use as it seeks to recover from Russian strikes on the power grid, while the elderly and vulnerable were preparing for voluntary evacuation of war-ravaged Kherson. This is VOA News. The United States and its allies have strongly condemned North Korea's latest intercontinental ballistic missile test and called for action to limit its nuclear and missile programs.
The United States is committed to pursuing a diplomatic approach. As we have repeatedly stated, we are prepared to meet without preconditions and a call on the DPRK to engage in serious and sustained diplomacy.
U.S. Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield at an emergency meeting of the U.N. Security Council on Monday. But Russia and China oppose any new pressure on North Korea. The southern Chinese metropolis of Guangzhou has locked down its largest district as it tries to tamp down a major COVID-19 outbreak, suspending public transit and requiring residents to present a negative test if they want to leave their homes. The outbreak is testing China's attempt to bring a more targeted approach to its zero COVID policies while facing multiple outbreaks. China's the only major country in the world still trying to curb virus transmissions through strict lockdown measures and mass testing. More aid arrived in Ethiopia's Tigray region following the signing of a truce earlier this month calling for unhindered humanitarian access to the war-torn northern region. Officials said 14 humanitarian aid trucks arrived on Sunday, including several carrying badly needed fuel and food aid from the UN's World Food Program. Catholic missionary Father Alfred.
If this is continued, I think that it is very good. But this seems to be the first step. Medicines also, the hospital says that is not yet enough.
Tigray is in the grip of a dire humanitarian crisis, the result of 2 years of restriction on aid. Mali's junta announced on Monday a ban on the activities of NGOs funded or supported by France, including humanitarian groups, amid a worsening row between Paris and Bamako. The West African nation's interim prime minister justified the move in a statement on social media, calling it a response to France's recent halt to development aid for Mali. The Colombian government and the South American country's largest remaining guerrilla group have resumed peace negotiations, breaking a roughly four-year hiatus during which the rebels have expanded the territory where they operate. Neighboring Venezuela on Monday hosted representatives of the National Liberation Army and the government of Colombian President Gustavo Petro. The discussions come more than a month after the announcement of the resumption of negotiations. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Today is Tuesday, November 22nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, search and rescue continues in Indonesia after 5.6 magnitude earthquake kills at least 162 people.
A 5.6 magnitude earthquake struck Indonesia's West Java province on Monday, killing scores and reducing buildings to rubble.
The U.S. calls for United Nations Security Council statement on North Korea missile tests.
This is the 10th time that we have met without significant actions. Two veto-wielding members of the council are enabling and emboldening the DPRK.
And the U.S. and Wales battle to a draw at the ongoing Qatar World Cup. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Ukrainian authorities have begun evacuating civilians from liberated areas in southern Kherson and Mykolaiv regions. They fear that infrastructure damage is too severe for people to endure the winter without power, heat and water. Ukraine said residents should move to safer parts of the country, and the government will give them transportation, accommodations and medical care. The WHO warned that millions in Ukraine face, quote, life-threatening winter, unquote. Also Monday, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and his wife made a rare joint public appearance to observe a moment of silence and place candles at a Kyiv memorial for those killed in Ukraine's pro-European Union mass protest in 2014. Search and rescue continued in Indonesia after a 4.6 magnitude earthquake killed at least 162 people and injured 100 others in West Java province on Monday. Lisa Knox of Reuters reports.
A 5.6 magnitude earthquake struck Indonesia's West Java province on Monday, killing scores and reducing buildings to rubble. The quake struck on land in Cianjur town, which is located about 45 miles from the capital, Jakarta. Hundreds have been injured, with hospitals having to treat many outside. Herman Schuerman is a local government official. He said over 700 people are injured, but it was difficult to keep count. Rescue efforts were underway, with rescuers trying to reach survivors trapped under rubble. But officials have warned that electricity is down in certain areas, disrupting communications efforts, and that access to some areas had been blocked by landslides, hampering evacuation efforts. In less than 2 hours after the quake hit, 25 aftershocks were recorded, according to the Weather and Geophysics Agency. In Jakarta, offices were evacuated, with workers saying they felt the building shake. Indonesia straddles the so-called Pacific Ring of Fire, a highly seismic active zone, meaning it is prone to earthquakes.
That's Louisa Nax of Reuters. The United States on Monday called for a United Nations Security Council presidential statement to hold North Korea accountable over its missile tests. This after Pyongyang launched an intercontinental ballistic missile last week, capable of reaching the U.S. mainland. The U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, said it was vital for the 15-member Security Council to respond with one voice and reiterated U.S. charges that China and Russia were, quote, emboldening, unquote, Pyongyang by blocking council action.
This is the 10th time that we have met without significant actions. The reason is simple. Two veto-wielding members of the council are enabling and emboldening the DPRK. They have allowed the regime to launch this latest reckless missile test, which endangered the lives of Japanese civilians and needlessly raises tensions in the region. These two members' blatant obstructionism put the Northeast Asian region and the entire world at risk. You simply cannot be considered a responsible steward of nuclear weapons if you condone this behavior. We will offer another opportunity for the Council to hold the DPRK accountable for its dangerous rhetoric and its destabilizing actions. The United States will be proposing a presidential statement to this end.
That's U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield. The Biden administration told a U.S. court late Thursday night that Prince Mohammed bin Salman should be granted sovereign immunity in a civil case filed after the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. The filing ended a last-ditch effort to hold the Saudi Crown Prince accountable for the U.S. journalist's killing in 2018. The Biden administration said the promotion of the Crown Prince to Prime Minister meant he was, quote, the sitting head of government, unquote, and is immune from prosecution. Khashoggi's fiancé and Khashoggi's founded Democracy for the Arab World Now, or DAWN, filed the lawsuit. VOA Press Freedom Desk editor Jessica Jarrett tells VOA's Carol Van Damme there's a lot of disappointment and even anger over the Biden administration's move.
If you think about the Khashoggi case, this was a exiled Saudi journalist, the Washington Post columnist who had residency here in the US and was murdered at the Saudi consulate in Turkey. And the United Nations Special Rapporteur for Extrajudicial Killings and the CIA both did independent investigations and concluded that the Crown Prince knew and ordered this killing. This is something that the Crown Prince denies. But I think certainly after Biden's meeting with the Crown Prince back in July, where he told reporters, Biden said, I'm holding this Crown Prince responsible, even though he denies that he was involved, that there was maybe a sense of hope that they wouldn't use this, they wouldn't push for immunity in this case. DAWN and other sort of media and legal analysts watching this always warn when this kind of thing happens, that it sends a really worrying message. Lina Al-Ahaloufi, who's the head of monitoring and communications for a Saudi rights activists group, was reported as saying today that the decision will empower a regime that punishes its own citizens and U.S. citizens alike.
What are observers saying is the reason behind the Biden administration's move right now to do this?
I think Khashoggi's fiancé, Hatice, put it best as she was on Twitter just after the announcement, saying that first that the Biden response made it feel like Jamil had died again today. But there's really a sense that money and Saudi-U.S. relations is being put ahead of a human life.
Are there other press freedom groups, for example, that are siding on the side of DAWN?
Just generally among the media freedom community internationally, there's been a lot of attention on this case and a sense today that this was another shot at justice for Jamal that has been shot down. Earlier this year, Turkey had been putting, I believe, 20 people on trial for their alleged involvement in carrying out this heinous attack on Khashoggi in the Saudi consulate. And on the advice of prosecutors, or on the request of prosecutors in April, Turkey suspended that court case and allowed it to be moved to Saudi Arabia, where again, media and legal analysts say it just makes for a very opaque judicial process. Immediately after the killing, Saudi Arabia said, we've identified people who are involved and we've held them to account, but they never released the names of these people allegedly involved. And I think with such a high profile killing, a killing that took place in a consulate in a third country, and particularly one involving a US resident and a journalist, there's a sense from the international community that this is really one of those cases that there has to be open sort of transparency and a clear judicial process so that everyone who might have been involved is held accounted for, that all of the evidence is made public so that people really understand what happened.
That's VOA Press Freedom editor Jessica Jarrett speaking with my colleague Carol Van Damme. Before beginning his six-day Thanksgiving holiday, U.S. President Joe Biden on Monday carried out a White House seasonal tradition, pardoning two turkeys. The story from VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman in Washington.
A day after his 80th birthday, President Joe Biden took part in a tradition that began 75 years ago, the pardoning of Thanksgiving turkeys. This year's lucky birds, Chocolate and Chip, both weighing about 21 kilograms each, were raised on a North Carolina ranch. During the ceremony, Biden said the holiday is all about coming together during tough times.
That's what the Thanksgiving tradition is all about, being grateful for what we have, and grateful for fellow Americans who we may never meet, but who will be, there you go, they're grateful.
The Thanksgiving meal is when tens of millions of American families reunite, and to the dread of some, there is frequently talk of politics, leading to heated exchanges across the table reflecting the polarized nation. Some will argue about who to blame for why the holiday meal and travel is more expensive this year compared to last Thanksgiving. According to the American Farm Bureau Federation and the Agriculture Department, inflation combined with a turkey shortage due to an outbreak of avian influenza has resulted in more than a 20% rise for the cost of the birds in supermarkets this November. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Steve. With the U.S. midterm elections over, the focus shifts to the 2024 presidential race. VOA's Michelle Quinn reports.
And we will make America great again. Thank you very much. God bless you all.
Last week, former President Donald Trump announced he was making another bid, his third for the White House. Just days later, the Biden administration's attorney general named a special counsel to investigate whether Trump had a role in the riot at the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, and whether he held classified documents after he left office 2 weeks later.
I'm here today to announce the appointment of a special counsel in connection with two ongoing criminal investigations that have received significant public attention.
The announcements come after the U.S. midterm results. Democrats surprised many by holding onto a slim majority in the Senate. The Republicans won control of the House of Representatives, but by less than predicted. Still, a split Congress means it will be harder for President Joe Biden, a Democrat, to pass legislation in the last 2 years of his term.
I'm proud to announce the era of one-party Democrat rule in Washington is over.
Some Republicans noted that candidates backed by Trump didn't do as well as expected, given Biden's perceived weakness. Since midsummer, as inflation concerns grew, Biden approval rating has hovered under 40%. Some Republican leaders say they oppose Trump as their party's presidential nominee.
We probably lose the White House with Trump, and if there's someone not named Trump, my guess is we win the White House.
Over the weekend, after 15 million people voted in a snap poll, Twitter CEO Elon Musk reinstated Trump's account. The site had banned Trump in 2021 after the rioting at the Capitol. But for now, Trump, according to reports, says he is sticking with his social media platform, Truth Social. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
A key UN committee has taken a first step towards agreeing on a treaty that recognizes crimes against humanity committed at any time, not just during conflicts. Associated Press correspondent Karine Chamas reports.
The committee that deals with legal issues has approved a resolution to hold sessions in the next 2 years, where groundwork would be laid to push through the treaty in September 2024. While there are treaties on genocide and torture, amongst others, there is no treaty specifically devoted to crimes against humanity, according to the group Human Rights Watch. Crimes against humanity have been defined by the International Criminal Court as crimes such as rape and torture committed against a civilian population based on a government or organizational policy. I'm Karen Chamas.
In other news, Gareth Bale converted a penalty kick in the 82nd minute to offset Tim Weir's first half goal and gives Wales a 1-1 draw against the United States in the return to the World Cup for both nations. Weir is the son of former FIFA Player of the Year and current Liberian President George Weir. The U.S. was back in the World Cup after missing the 2018 tournament and appeared headed to victory, but Walker Zimmerman plowed down Bale from behind with the Welsh stars back to the goal, and Bale converted the penalty for his 41st international goal. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Public hearings begin Monday in Australia as a special commission investigates unsolved suspected hate crimes involving the deaths of LGBTQ between 1970 and 2010. The inquiry is in the state of New South Wales. It's said to be the first of its kind in the world and was established in April following recommendations by a parliamentary committee. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Gay rights campaigners have said that in the 1980s, violence toward LGBTQI people in the Australian city of Sydney was almost seen as a sport, and that homophobia was rife in the early days of the HIV epidemic. Victims were believed to have been thrown off cliffs or beaten to death in parks. Many suspected homicides went unsolved. A committee of lawmakers in 2021 said the police in New South Wales had failed to investigate suspected cases of gay and transgender hate crimes. A special commission of inquiry on Monday begins gathering evidence in public as it seeks to close what state government officials said was a dark chapter in Australian history. It will examine the cause of death in all unsolved suspected hate crimes in New South Wales between 1970 and 2010, where the victim was a member of the LGBTQI community and the death was previously investigated by the police. Activists say there have been between 20 and 30 unsolved cases, but by 2010, Australia had amended more than 70 pieces of legislation to remove discrimination between lesbian and gay couples. Nicola Stewart, the Vice President of Australian Lawyers for Human Rights, told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation the brutality of the past must be exposed.
The community deserves truth and justice. There are so many hurting families and friends, as well as surviving victims of hate crimes, who have desperately wanted a government to recognise what they've been through.
Meanwhile, a man convicted of the murder of a gay American man has had his conviction overturned after judges accepted that he should be able to withdraw his guilty plea. The body of Scott Johnson, 27, a mathematician studying at the Australian National University, was found at the base of a cliff in Sydney in 1988. His relatives for years argued his death was a hate crime. Scott Philip White, 51, who was sentenced in May to more than 12 years in prison, is expected to face a retrial over the alleged murder. Same-sex marriage has been legal in Australia since December 2017. The New South Wales State Special Commission of Inquiry into LGBTQI hate crimes is to report its findings by the end of June 2023. Campaigners are calling for a national inquiry into alleged hate crimes committed in other parts of the country. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
South Africa's highest appeal court has ruled that former President Jacob Zuma must return to prison, saying his release from a contempt of court sentence last year on medical parole was unlawful. Linda Giftash reports from Johannesburg.
South Africa's former president Jacob Zuma lost his appeal Monday to remain on medical parole. The 80-year-old has been serving a 15-month sentence for contempt of court since July 2021 for refusing to appear before a national inquiry on state graft during his tenure. Zuma's arrest last year sparked protests from his supporters that spiraled into widespread unrest and looting, mainly in his home province of KwaZulu-Natal and the country's economic hub of Gauteng. But Zuma spent less than 2 months behind bars, having swiftly been granted medical parole for an undisclosed illness. That decision was reversed by South Africa's highest court last December. But a lengthy legal battle against the ruling means Zuma avoided a return to prison until today. South Africa's Supreme Court of Appeals upheld the High Court's ruling that medical parole was granted, quote, unlawfully, unquote, for having considered factors that were irrelevant to qualifying. But the appeals court did not uphold the High Court verdict that his time served on medical parole should be nullified, which would have resulted in Zuma serving a full 15 months behind bars. Instead, the court ruled the National Commissioner of Correctional Services could decide whether the former president's time on parole would be subtracted from his sentence. If allowed, Zuma would serve no additional time in jail for the contempt of court. Zuma's party, the ruling African National Congress, have yet to release a statement on the ruling. South Africa's opposition Democratic Alliance Party called on the commissioner to stick with the initial ruling from the High Court so Zuma would, quote, serve his sentence like any ordinary South African, unquote. Zuma could still fight the decision by appealing to the Constitutional Court, which initially ruled him guilty of contempt. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
This is Science in a Minute.
Several studies and findings made by spacecraft, rovers, and landers from NASA and other space agencies suggest that some 4.5 billion years ago, Mars had a thick, rich atmosphere and oceans of flowing water on its surface, which could have possibly supported life. A new study published in the journal Science Advances proposes that early in its evolution, the red planet was covered with water with an average depth of 300 meters. The study led by researchers at the University of Copenhagen suggests all of that water came from ice-filled asteroids which showered the planet for its first 100 million years. Study authors also found that the asteroids brought important biological molecules like amino acids to Mars. Amino acids are one of the important building blocks that make life possible. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Protests have been growing inside and outside Iran, initially sparked by the death in police custody of Mahsa Amini, a young woman arrested by Iran's morality police for not having her hair fully covered. Each Wednesday, go beyond the breaking news with VOA's Flashpoint Iran. Listen online at voanews.com or in your podcast player.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs program, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Chinedu from Washington, wishing you a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In early November, North Korea, formerly known as the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, or DPRK, launched another barrage of missiles, including a surface-to-air missile that landed a mere 57 kilometers from South Korea, formerly known as the Republic of Korea, or ROK. Another of the missiles launched in early November was an intercontinental ballistic missile the DPRK claims is capable of carrying a nuclear warhead. Pyongyang announced that the launches were practice for a quote-unquote merciless attack on ROK and U.S. targets. Speaking at a United Nations Security Council briefing on the DPRK's missile firings, U.S. Ambassador to the UN, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, condemned in the strongest possible terms all recent DPRK missile launches since October 27. She noted that the latest test of an intercontinental ballistic missile is particularly concerning. Ambassador Thomas-Greenfield declared that the DPRK's aggressive behavior is more than just advancing the DPRK's unlawful military capabilities and undermining the global non-proliferation regime. This is also about the DPRK trying to purposely raise tensions and stoke fear in its neighbors. In response to the DPRK's aggressive behavior over the past several months, the United States and the ROK have further deepened their cooperation to bolster their shared security. In July, the United States deployed fifth-generation fighter aircraft to the ROK, and in October, the USS Ronald Reagan Carrier Strike Group redeployed to the Sea of Japan after Pyongyang launched a long-range ballistic missile over Japan. The day after the DPRK's early November missile barrage, U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin and ROK Defense Minister Lee Jong-sup met at the Pentagon for the previously scheduled 54th U.S. Republic of Korea Security Consultative Meeting. The U.S. commitment to defending the ROK is ironclad, said Defense Secretary Austin after the meeting. On the peninsula, he noted, we're returning to large-scale exercises to strengthen our combined readiness and our ability to fight tonight, if necessary. We're committed to building on these efforts to strengthen integrated deterrence and to ensure that this alliance continues to bolster security and stability on the Korean Peninsula and throughout the Indo-Pacific. We will confront the challenges of the future the same way that we have for nearly 70 years, Secretary Austin declared, by standing shoulder to shoulder as proud allies.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.